Walter Wallace Jr. was 27 years old, a father, a husband, and a black man in need of help. On Monday afternoon, in the middle of a mental health crisis, his family says they called for an ambulance, but police arrived instead, and Wallace was shot and killed by two officers. Just 3 weeks earlier, the Philadelphia Police Department announced a new program designed to reduce violent encounters like this one. The program calls for a behavioral health worker to help identify 911 calls related to mental health and require a different kind of response. So why did the police still end up shooting Walter Wallace? I'm Malcolm Burnley. This is The Why. WHYY reporters Jimena Condi and Nina Feldman have been digging for answers. Jimena has been talking to people in the West Philly neighborhood where Wallace was shot and killed by police.
We know this was the third time police showed up to answer a call about Wallace that day on the 6100 block of Locust Street. Wallace was 27. He had recently gotten married, and Wallace had a pregnant wife who is due this week. Speaking to reporters, his two children said he was big on spending time with them.
So we need to always hang out, we need to always go places, and we need to always play around.
But he was having a mental crisis that day. His family's lawyer, Shaka Johnson, says he suffered from a mental illness. He was manic and bipolar.
He was on doctor's care. He was on a regimen of lithium, etc.
The police had been at the house twice already that day. Wallace's mother, Kathy, said that the first two instances they showed up, the police actually laughed at Wallace.
They weren't trying to help us. They didn't give a damn about us.
We don't know exactly what caused Wallace to go into distress, and we also don't know why neighbors called the police. But when they did get there, Kathy, Wallace's mom, managed to defuse the situation and police left without a problem. But by that afternoon, Walsh's relatives say that he was acting erratically. And according to the family lawyer, Shaka Johnson, it was Wallace's brother who dialed 911 and asked to get some help.
Law enforcement was called because they wanted an ambulance to come here. They wanted an ambulance. The police are who arrived first.
Once police arrived at Wallace's home after this third call, what happened?
So things escalated pretty quickly. Two of the officers arrived and found Wallace holding a knife.
His wife told them that he was manic and bipolar when the officers were standing at the foot of these steps.
And according to eyewitnesses and video captured the moments before Wallace's shooting, police almost immediately drew their weapons. Wallace's mom, who was outside, says she told police that Wallace was her son and tried to prevent Wallace from going near the police.
Yes, I was telling the police to stop. Don't shoot my son. Please don't shoot my son. They paid me no mind.
Neighbors also stepped in. They were screaming that they knew him, also asking police not to shoot. In the video, Wallace appears to be several feet away from the officers while they have their guns drawn, and he's clutching this knife, and you can see that he's advancing forward, and then the camera kind of pans away, and that's when police open fire. In total, they fired their weapons 14 times. One of the officers then took Wallace to the hospital, and that is where he was pronounced dead.
How did the neighborhood react?
This is a very tight-knit block. The residents I spoke with, they said that they all kind of know each other. They know of each other. Some residents said that they didn't really know Wallace that well, but they were still angry that he was shot in broad daylight. One of the main questions that they had was why police resorted to shooting immediately. And it's not just that block. People, you know, in other parts of West Philadelphia, have seen the video and, you know, they're asking the same questions.
You see that video, it's heartbreaking. It make you cry.
I spoke with Bruce Booker.
Yeah.
How long have you lived in West Philly?
I live in West Philly 57 years. I've been born and raised here, basically.
And he says he doesn't have all the details, but he also questions the approach of firing first and then asking questions later.
The guy's 10 feet away. That's why you got a taser. You tase him. You don't have to shoot him. If you do shoot him in the leg. But they gunned him down. That's what I'm trying to say. In front of his mom, the police handled that wrong. Very wrong.
Nina, has the police department said that the use of force in this instance was justified?
The short answer is they don't know yet. Police Commissioner Danielle Outlaw said on Tuesday,
I have directed the officer involved shooting investigation unit to begin this investigation. There are many questions that demand answers.
As of the moment we're recording this, they haven't yet released body camera footage or the 911 call, but Police Commissioner Danielle Outlaw said she will do that in the near future after the families had a chance to see it for themselves. So they're continuing to look into things.
We're still backtracking to find out what the officers knew and what was dispatched to the officers at the time that they arrived on scene.
The officers are both taken off street duty as of right now while the investigation is pending. Police Commissioner Outlaw did confirm that they didn't have tasers on them.
Every police officer is not issued a taser.
It's a question of kind of how much they knew or should have known based on a lot of different steps in the 911 call and the dispatch and who was assigned to the scene and what they should have known when they got there.
Did they have training for this kind of thing?
We don't know for sure if those officers had crisis intervention training. About half of Philadelphia police officers do. But there are some logistical complications in terms of how to get properly trained officers to the scene fastest. It's not necessarily the case that when somebody picks up the phone in the radio control room, when somebody calls 911, that the car or the squad team that is closest to the emergency is going to have that training. And that's something that Commissioner Outlaw said that they're looking into as a part of this overall investigation in terms of interrogating this as like a staffing issue and a preparation issue for the department beyond just whether the individuals acted correctly. Have they undergone a training that they should have, or were the right people who were correctly trained deployed?
Do we even know if the two officers who were involved in the shooting of Walter Wallace Jr. were the same officers who had showed up earlier in the day?
We don't know if it was them or if it was another car or squad or what.
Got it. My guess is this is not the first instance of mental health and a deadly police shooting in the city. Have there been other examples of mental health crisis response that have gone wrong?
Yeah, you're right. There have actually been several instances recently. In May of 2019, a police detective shot Joel Johnson, who is an unarmed, intellectually disabled man who approached the detective's car asking for change. And later that year in September, a police shot Darren Lee, who was in a similar situation to Wallace. I mean, there are just a lot of parallels. Lee was having a mental health crisis and had a knife. This is a tricky situation in police departments all over the country because police are the ones who show up to situations when someone's in crisis. About 1 in 10 of those calls nationwide is somebody with a mental illness. And, you know, we don't necessarily know that police are the right people to be responding to those calls. And police officers themselves and people who are at the higher level of decision making on these things within the PPD totally acknowledge that. Earlier this month, I spoke with Francis Healy, who's a special advisor to Police Commissioner Danielle Outlaw. And, you know, he said they know that this is not the best way to handle things.
We are the only people available 24/7. So people call us for everything and anything. And we've accepted that responsibility, but oftentimes we may not be the best response.
We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Malcolm Burnley. This is The Why. I'm talking with WHYY reporters Jimena Condi and Nina Feldman about the Philadelphia Police Department's policies around responding to a mental health crisis. The PPD, as you noted, has already identified this as an issue. What about this 911 call program? Wasn't that supposed to be something that would help in a situation like this?
Yes, that program is supposed to help in a situation pretty much exactly like this. The Philadelphia Police Department knows that this is a weak spot for them, flagging and identifying mental health calls and responding to them appropriately. So in the beginning of October, the department announced a new program in partnership with the city's Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services. And the way it would work is that a behavioral health expert was going to be embedded into the 911 radio room with the call dispatchers. And her job at first was just going to be to listen in on calls, screen them, help develop a system for understanding kind of what type of thing to listen for or ask about in determining if a call had a mental health crisis attached to it. And so her first task was just to develop that coding system so that the correct and appropriately trained officers would be deployed.
And what was the idea long term?
Later, the goal of the program was to scale up so that a behavioral health expert would actually be deployed alongside officers to the scene when those specific types of calls were identified. And when I talked to Francis Healy about this when the program was rolling out, he said, you know, we want this to be in place and we want everybody to know about it so that trust can really be built or strengthened or rebuilt with the community.
That they know when they call 911 that the appropriate response is coming. I mean, they want help when they call 911, that we can help facilitate and make sure that help gets to the right people. And I think that will help build the relationships and the credibility that we need with the community.
On Monday afternoon, when Wallace's family called 911, was there a behavioral health specialist in the dispatch room at that time?
No. Commissioner Outlaw said the program was still in its infancy and that person was, you know, there to help develop the program, but she didn't happen to be there at the time when the call came in.
You know, all of these things have been underway, but really got some momentum in the last several months. And we're working with the city to determine just really the types of calls that we should be responding to and if we do, how.
So despite the PPD announcing the program, the reforms just weren't in place in time for this incident with Walter Wallace Jr. Is that fair to say?
I think so.
We have Wallace's family saying they called specifically for medical help, but there were also reportedly several 911 calls that afternoon pointing officers to the house. What should cops have known or not known about Wallace's mental health before they arrived?
We don't have the 911 calls, and until we do, it's going to be really hard to know what the officers knew or should have known. The Wallace family lawyer, Shaka Johnson, really laid out the case for the fact that these officers should have known that Wallace was having a mental health crisis. But for instances like that, where you do know that somebody's having a mental health issue, there are a lot of questions about whether police should be responding to those calls at all. I talked to Evan Anderson, again, when this program rolled out, and he's a public health and criminal justice researcher at the University of Pennsylvania.
So there's a sort of longstanding concern about if you have increased partnerships between law enforcement and public health, that you'll create sort of more potential ways for people to get caught up and more ways for behavior to get criminalized.
Anderson also says 911 is currently the only and fastest way to respond to an emergency. That infrastructure is there. It's set up. And he really views this kind of program that the PPD was aiming for as a good incremental step to leverage that existing response network to be able to respond in a different way. And, you know, we just hadn't built it out yet, and we're sort of seeing the consequences of that.
This 911 policy was announced in part to try to help restore trust between the police and the community. But now with the events of this last week, has that backfired?
You know, it's certainly a setback. That's what the family's lawyer said.
And I find it extremely, extremely, It's emotionally taxing to think about how you could call for assistance and wind up with the people who you called killing you. I can't even conceive the concept. I just can't.
If anything, this week's incident shows that this program is needed more than ever. That was really laid bare. And whether or not that trust can be rebuilt, I think we'll just have to wait and see.
Right. Jimena, I'm having deja vu because this was the same neighborhood that we just talked to you about on The Why that was hit hard by aggressive police response after protests following the killing of George Floyd. What are you hearing from neighbors?
Yeah, and from the community point of view, this is just another example of the police department promising change, making statements saying, you know, that they're going to work hard to build trust with the community, creating some sort of initiative, and then that initiative falling short and, you know, having a repeat of a Black resident being killed for what they see as an unjustified reason.
I feel like the world coming to an end. This stuff is starting to be the new norm.
One of the residents I spoke with, her name was Anne. She didn't want to give me her last name, but she had a really pessimistic view as to what the future of policing and the West Philly community looked like.
Until they do something about something, this is going to be. Till the cops learn to shoot people in the foot or tase them. Yeah, they keep killing. This is going to keep being the same results. This is going to be an endless circle of bull.
A lot of them are skeptical that the police department can really change without a total overhaul.
Well, thank you, Jimena, and thank you, Nina, for all your reporting, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Jimena Condi and Nina Feldman are reporters for WHYY. Ryan Briggs also contributed reporting to this episode. The Why is produced by me, Malcolm Burnley, along with Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, Kelsey Hansen, Sabrina Boyd-Circa, and Buffy Gorilla. We get editorial direction from Katie Culinary. You can find me on Twitter @MalcolmBurnley. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. We'll be back Monday.